This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 31st of August 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. Monday equals art, as you may have gathered so far on this show. And this week, we're off to New York City. We'll be discussing Warriors and Mothers, a display of Mbembe art by the master carvers from southeastern Nigeria at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. We'll take a look at the Guggenheim's major retrospective of Colombian artist Doris Salcedo's work. And on display at the MoMA is Jacob Lawrence's series on the Great Migration, entitled One Way Ticket. And who better to lead us through this artistic trio than Charlotte Burns, US News Market and Business Editor at the Art Newspaper, who will be joining me down the line from our New York bureau. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. First things first, welcome to the programme, Charlotte, once again.
Thanks very much for having me.
Clear as a bell on the line from New York City. Now you've got three sort of many and varied exhibitions to talk us through, but all at three of the kind of superstar locations for seeing shows. We're going first to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and this is called Warriors and Mothers. It's epic Mbembe art. This is Nigerian sculptures. This is sort of ethnographic stuff. Talk us through this one, Charlotte.
Well, this is an interesting sculpture. It's a very small show. There's only 14 works, I think, in the show in total. And that's because there aren't very many other examples of Mbembe sculpture known at all. It's a kind of strange story. In 1972, a Parisian gallery owner called Hélène Kamer, who specialised in African art, was visiting with a Malian dealer who was in town to, you know, make some sales. And he had these wooden carved, one wooden carved female figure, which is one of these Mbembe sculptures. And it's of a type that Kamer couldn't place. And the dealer he didn't tell her about his source, but he said he could get more. And he returned the following summer and he brought 12 figures with him in total. And they'd been made by the Mbembe, who are from the southeastern Nigeria near the border of Cameroon. And the tradition for making these works had pretty much been abandoned under colonialism. And the reason that they were so interesting is because they were kind of atypical for the work that, you know, specialists in African art knew of as examples of African art. This had more in common with, you know, from Western eyes, sort of Giacometti sculptures than the more kind of what was perceived to be more primitive sculptures that dealers were familiar with around that time. Interestingly, they've become to be associated with, you know, the kind of typical rather than atypical examples of African art, which, you know, some critics have argued is a very Western-centric way of placing different cultures on display.
Yeah, I mean, from Western eyes, are they kind of easily readable as kind of figurative sculptures? Or are they the other side of the coin? As you mentioned, Giacometti, do they take the idea of the human form into sort of metaphorical realms?
I think that, like, to me, it's sort of like the same sort of equivalent as a stained glass window, you know, where you can tell what's going on. It's meant to be symbolic. You're meant to gather things pretty easily. These figures were attached to drums that were the sort of broadcasting devices for the culture in terms of spreading news, gathering people, moving people, you know, celebrating festivals. And these carved figures were sort of portraits of ancestors. And there were, even though the title's called The Warriors and Mothers, which made me think it was just mothers for some reason. Maybe that's because I'm a woman. It turns out that it's men and women, which surprised me. And the men are, you know, shown as the warriors and, you know, very kind of fierce fighting, but also protective of their culture warriors. So there's, you know, a couple of decapitated heads there. And the women are shown as nurturing mothers. So it's the two sides of this culture and its self-representation. So you're meant to grasp it.
And reading around this show, the New York Times had a nice review where they talked about Western culture being, how fragile these sculptures appear to be and how Western culture, they say, is in love with the romance of ruins. The Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City isn't really in love with the romance of ruins. It's a great preserver of things, isn't it? How easily does this show sit in the Met, which is so concerned with making things spick and span, perhaps?
I think the Met is the so massive that the Met can sort of show anything it likes. You know, you can have, you know, down the hall an exhibition of Chinese sort of fashion and culture, which has been really well received and is closing this week. You have the Mbembe sculptures. You have, you know, the, you know, arms and armaments department. It's the Met. You know, it can kind of take anything that you want to throw at it. It sits very well there. And I do think the West is probably slightly in love with ruins in that romantic way. But there is something evocative about looking at sculptures that were, you know, once so solid that are now and used, and, you know, they weren't just sort of placed on plinths and that are now looking much more fragile.
Yeah, well, they're beautiful things, and we should lead our listeners in the direction, therefore, of warriors and mothers. You can read that sentence to mean the same thing. That's on at the Metropolitan Museum of Art until the 16th of December. Plenty of time for that one. Next, Charlotte, we're going to go to the Guggenheim. This is a retrospective, I guess, pretty much, of Doris Salcedo's work. What can you tell us about Doris Salcedo, first of all?
Well, Doris Salcedo, for Brits out there, will probably know her best through the 2007 Turbine Hall Commission, where she sort of cracked a large fissure in the floor of the Tate Modern. And, you know, it was reviewed either splendidly or terribly, depending on which paper you read. And she has, for more than 30 years, been addressing trauma and basically acting as a sort of artistic mourner for cultures that have been destroyed, largely her own Colombian culture. But she also looks more broadly than that. I mean, there are works that are looking at, you know, victims of gun violence in America. So it's very elegiac, her work. It's sort of, you know, she takes horror and the kind of horrible emotions of grief and, you know, murder and loss, and sort of freezes them in time, sort of like staccato notes or something on a page trying to get off.
And what do these works look like, Charlotte? I mean, there are a few images that we found. They suggest loss. They're kind of, they're rooms which suggest a sort of bereftness, aren't they? But what lead us through a couple of the sort of key works in this show.
Well, this show's at the Guggenheim, which obviously is known for its famous rotunda. And the works wouldn't have, you know, function properly in that open, airy, circular space. So instead, they're inside galleries off the museum. And you sort of need that in these, you know, you need that containment and compression, I think, with Salcedo to some extent, with these works, certainly, and not her site-specific pieces. The works vary. She's very well known for taking domestic objects and altering them into a slightly more macabre state. So one of her famous works, which is on show here, are the sort of concrete-filled pieces of furniture where she's, you know, broken down two separate pieces of furniture, merged them together so you can have like an armoire and a chair, and then filled with concrete. So these things are sort of literally carrying the weight of history. Or her more recent works, she has two tables. She sort of breaks things and heals them at the same time. So she, you know, rips apart two tables and then sews them together. Or she preserves shoes of women that had a traumatic past, and she puts them into the wall at the Guggenheim and then sews, quite violently sews with this black thread, sews a sort of semi-translucent paper over the top so you can sort of see the shoe. And it's kind of like stitches on a body.
And what's, and what's the atmosphere in these galleries? This seems like a very, I mean, it's thoughtful work, it's thought-provoking work. It seems like a quiet Guggenheim, perhaps, at this time of year for the Doris Salcedo show.
Yeah, it's interesting because the rest of the museum is dedicated to an exhibition of works from the permanent collection, Contemporary Art, which is very varied and, you know, slightly, you know, noisy contemporary art. And then you have Doris Salcedo sort of tucked off quietly into these galleries, sort of like a confessional. So you can go there for a moment's reprieve.
There's a bit of light and shade at the Guggenheim.
Yes, lots of shade, yeah.
Lots of shade. That is Doris Salcedo. That show is on at the Guggenheim in New York until the 9th of September. We're going to close the show with Jacob Lawrence. This is at the MoBA, the MoMA, Jacob Lawrence's Migration series. Charlotte, talk us through this one. This sounds like sort of like a fascinating subject matter, for sure.
Yeah, this is a really great show. It's just about to close, so if you're in New York, you should go and see it before it does. It's been really well received. It's the first time that in decades that Jacob Lawrence's Migration series has been shown together. And there's 60 paintings, a sort of suite of small works that he made when he was, I think, 23. He began making these works in Harlem in 1941. And they're tempera on hardwood, and it sort of details the massive migration of African Americans that began during the First World War from the rural South to the urban North. And he details these works in this, he details the migration with the images and also captions. And the captions are simple, you know, they end with, "and the migrants kept coming." He's sort of like reportage. He's bearing witness, really, to what he's seen and heard around him. So there's certain works where he'll, you know, have an image of pallbearers carrying a coffin. He says, you know, basically when migrants got to the north, tuberculosis rose, and so did the death rate. There's talk of lynchings, there's talk of race riots, because some of the African Americans were brought up to the north in order to break strikes, which caused a lot of resentment with the white working class. So he goes through various reasons other than the Jim Crow laws, which was obviously a major motivating factor for lots of African Americans to leave the South at that time for the, you know, promise of slightly more freedom and the right to vote in the North.
And this show also includes sort of other documentation, and in fact about the migration from that era, including music by Duke Ellington, Billie Holiday, and things like that. How does that work as part of this show, Charlotte?
It's fantastic. It's really great. The context, you really understand the context in which Lawrence was working and what was really happening. So you have his suite of paintings, which is a sort of wonderful heart to the show, in the center of all the rooms. And then you have, in addition to the music, you know, which includes Billie Holiday singing Strange Fruit, which is the sort of
song about the lynching. Yeah,
trees in the South bear strange fruit. And you have that and that's on video. And then you have this sort of hallway where you hear examples of the blues, all this kind of great music that we all know and love and are familiar with. You hear it in a different context through different eyes than you probably did growing up. Also, there's a suite of photographs where lots of photojournalists were documenting the migration and the sort of, you know, despair of the migration, and the sense that lots of people still had to basically do paid domestic labor and wait in a, like New York had a slave market essentially, or to the hope of things, you know, people waiting outside polling stations. So you get
there's a lot of photography of Black people of that era waiting, having to wait to use the tap, you know, or having to wait for someone to walk out of a doorway. That's quite poignant, isn't it? That sort of photography of people looking shy of the camera, maybe, and shy of kind of what they're being captured doing somehow. You mentioned tempera on hardwood. Is that's sort of considered sort of poor man's materials in the art world compared to canvases, is it?
Well, it's definitely cheaper.
Yeah.
But Lawrence was young, and he was working in a studio that didn't have heat or running water at the time. And he's sort of like a scholar. You know, he'd been researching a lot about the migration, and then he painted this series in something of a flurry. The show in New York was the first exhibition of an African-American artist in New York, in a New York gallery. And its acquisition by MoMA and a museum in D.C. They split it in a weird fashion where one museum bought the odd-numbered paintings and the other museum bought the even-numbered paintings.
That's a good way of doing it. Toss of a coin, right?
Literally, you know, flipping a coin.
Yeah.
And they bought the works in this... And that was the first acquisition by MoMA of a work by an African-American artist. So it's kind of amazing that, you know, that Jacob Lawrence, he was trying to be, he was trying to document things, and he was trying to get the word out there, but he actually was creating history as well as painting it.
It seems like a fantastic, very hot ticket, none more so because it closes on the 7th of September. As Charlotte says, get yourselves down to the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. That was Jacob Lawrence's Migration series and other works. Before that, we talked about Doris Salcedo. She's on at the Guggenheim until the 9th of September. And we opened by talking about Warriors and Mothers, Epic Mbembe Art. And that is on at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. So it just remains for me, Charlotte, to say thank you very much indeed for joining us on the line from our New York bureau. And you've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again tomorrow for our music review. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound. Thank you very much for tuning in.